Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts. Sports Car Racing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new season of the IMSA iRacing Pro Series. Great to have your company wherever you are joining us around the world. This is round one of the IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by Simcraft for 2021. And man, have we got a set of drivers for you. Some things the same, some things very much different. And the first thing that you're going to notice is you will see and hear two different classes of cars. The GT Le Mans are back and they will be added to by LMP2 in the first of the three races this season. We will be starting at Sebring International Raceway in Florida. It will be Nick Damon and me, John Hindhoff. Good to have your company. And you can get us at IMSA Radio on Twitter. That's the best way to get us here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Very much looking forward to bringing you the action. Qualifying still ongoing at the moment, so we can't give you any big news about who is qualifying where. But we have some huge names, including the returning champion Bruno Spengler for BMW. Nick Tandy, of course, now in a Corvette. John Edwards for BMW, along with his teammate Conor DeFilippi. Philippe Eng, all BMW drivers. And in the LMP2 category, well, Mirko Bortolotti, Michael Johnson, James Pesek and Scott Andrews, among others. Delighted to say that joining us now, we have a very special guest with a bit of luck. And hello to Sean Patrick McDonald, who's the co-founder and chief technologist of Simcraft. First of all, thank you for joining us. Secondly, thank you for supporting the championship this year. Why did you want to get involved with the IMSA iRacing Pro Series, Sean?
Well, thanks, John. I'm delighted to be here. We got involved with this series really because we're fans of the sport, and a lot of our customers are sports car racers. I've been a fan of sports car racing since my first trip to Petit back in 2007, and you know, it's hard to stay away from it.
I've spoken to some of your halo drivers, if you will, in the IMSA paddock down through the years. They rave about your equipment. Now, some people are a bit on the fence as far as it comes to motion simulators. Why does yours work, and why is it the best?
Well, there are a lot of ways to achieve motion simulation, it seems. There are a lot of devices out there that you know, do some variation of moving a seat or moving a cockpit. It's really the method of how you achieve the motion which is different for us. We try to follow a system that my late father, conceived back in the late 90s, and that's using simple machines and bearings and gimbals and things of that nature to support your load and rotate around a mechanical system that's actually designed to rotate and translate like cars do in real life.
Tell me a little bit about where you are in the world, because you're not that far away from Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, are you?
No, we're about an hour away. We're in Marietta, which is the northwest corner of Atlanta. And we've been here set up for about 16 years now, been operating. Launched the Apex model in 2009 and been growing, adding different chassis and different degrees of freedom over the years.
Tell me a little bit about some of the equipment that's around you. I see a very interesting array, both to your left and right. What are the highlights there, Sean?
Well, behind me is all flagship chassis, essentially. It's the bigger model that we build. It starts with an Apex 3 with a roll, pitch, and yaw, the three rotations. Within the same chassis, we can add the translations of sway, surge, and heave. And so behind me, you'll see, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 Apex 6s, and one Apex 3 is the red one in back. And this orange guy here right close to me is actually yet to be assembled into anything, but good for the shot.
It all looks very good. I also see an awful lot of Amazon packaging boxes around you. So clearly you're getting in components from all over the place. But where do you send your rigs to? I'm in the UK. Obviously, my life is not complete without a SimCraft rig. Could you get one to me?
It's theoretically possible, yes. We ship and install units all over the world. Of course, the majority of our business is here in the States, we're open to, you know, working with customers all over the place. And I've personally been to probably 20 countries now.
Well, all the details on the website, of course, Sean. Final question from you. Two classes this evening for the first time ever in the IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by SimCraft.
Yes.
Right, come on.
Yeah.
Which one of your drivers do you really think has got it tonight in either of the classes? Come on, who's been practicing the most? Who's been on the phone asking you to get the absolute right setup for the rigs?
Well, you know, John, I'm going to pump Dylan Murray. He's our guy. He's right over there on our Apex 6. He's been here all day working hard, working on setup and working on our system. So we're pulling for the SimCraft car. He'll be in the Porsche.
Wish him and you all the best. Sean, thank you very much for being a part of this, and we'll speak to you at the next round, I'm sure.
Thank you for having me. Have a great race.
Joining us live from Marietta, Georgia, thank you very much indeed to Sean for the IMSA Racing Pro Series presented by SimCraft. And we start where we started last season with the big Sebring event, Sebring International Raceway, right in Central Florida. And the hashtag for the real racetrack is respect the bumps. We've got respect the virtual bumps tonight. Just on 3¾ miles, a mix of names and numbers for the corners. And when you've got names like Le Mans and Gurney and, you know, it's steeped in history here. Originally Hendricks Field, of course, a World War II bomber base named actually for a pilot who sadly has a connection with not too far away from where I am talking to you at the moment. First Lieutenant Laird Woodruff Hendricks Jr., a native of Florida, who sadly just 3 days after coming over to RAF Polbrook, which is not 10 minutes away from where I am, was killed in 1941. He was here to train Royal Air Force pilots on the then brand new B-17C RAF version of the Fortress, and we remember his sacrifice as well this evening. Here's the race analysis by SimCraft. 60 minutes, two fast repairs, open setup with a slightly different look to how the cars will start on the fuel loads. We'll go into that in our keys to the race in a moment. At the moment, as far as we've seen a bit of qualifying, one or two drivers have swapped, but I think we've got 15 P2s and 20 GT Le Mans. So let's head into our keys to the race, and I'll bring in the second voice this evening, Nick Damon, who was with me for the last season as well. Hello, Nick. Looking forward to this one, first of all?
Oh, dramatically, yes. Another year on, and more importantly, another year on in my own sim career. I've done so many laps around Sebring virtually on the iRacing platform in the past few weeks. I know, back in the hand.
Here's the SimCraft IMSA Radio keys to the race for Sebring. Respect the virtual bumps. We were having a laugh about that earlier on, but you've driven laps around here. You've done a 12 and a 6 recently. Is that true?
Oh, especially around Sunset Bend, the Turn 17, John. Yeah, I mean, there are several different lines. None of them are particularly good because you're constantly not where you want to be because you've been bounced off. And there's one particularly unpleasant one just past the apex, which if you decide you're going to put your power on before you've gone over it, you will find yourself Jimmy Johnsoning yourself straight into the barrier.
Class action. We're not talking about someone, a whole group of people who's had a nightmare in getting to work in the traffic in the morning.
Could be the GTLMs.
Well, it could be. It could be. Nick Tandy telling us on Midweek Motorsport just this past Wednesday over on RS1 that he wasn't sure how this was going to work because two classes means the traffic is not just about passing but being passed.
Yeah, I mean, there's a common idea that, you know, the big bully fast prototypes are going to wipe the just bully their way past GTLMs. But the GTLM cars need to help and learn to be passed as well. Now, the thing to remember is when you watch full metal multi-class racing, it seems so simple as the cars slip by each other. But a lot of those moves you can make in full metal, you just can't make virtually because remember the drivers often don't have the same amount of peripheral vision as they have in the world. So it's much harder to actually get past and be passed in virtual racing, hence the rows and the accidents.
Cars are going to be on the grid in a second, so let's rattle through the last three. I'll put Don't Be a Fuel and Be Flexible together. Fuel is going to be part of the strategy here. The GT Le Mans cars could have almost gone the full hour. We've taken that out, so it's not just a fuel mileage race. They'll start with, what, around about half an hour's 40 minutes?
40 minutes, John. 40 right. minutes of fuel, yeah.
So that's going to be about the same for both of the classes, but you might have to be a little bit flexible, but you've got to get the fuel drop right to get you to the end. A couple of seconds short, you could be really in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, there's I think we have a good conversation during the race about fuel, but the key thing is you can save fuel, which will shorten your time, but more importantly, you can play with the fuel. If you get stuck in a train of traffic, it might be worth dropping in a couple laps earlier if you feel you're quicker and do the old-fashioned undercut.
And the tyres. I don't think anybody will change tyres, but somebody who can look after a tyre, like a Shane Van Gisbergen did last year, having tyre performance in the last 10 minutes could be critical.
Genuinely, I don't think tyres are going to be an issue with the P2s. I do think with the GT Le Mans, which were recently modelled to have much more wearable, less durable tyres, I think at the end, if you've really mullered the car, in the last three or four laps, you will suffer and be seeing your lap times dropping by half to three quarters of a second just because you're a few percentage down more on the wear levels.
Right, let's head to the grid and see how we have got the cars out there. Scott Andrews on pole position. The times were very, as you might expect really, were very, very close indeed. 46-0 for Scott against Daniel Morad's 46-6 on the outside, on the inside of the second row. Richard Highstand in outside of row one. Shinya Mashimi is along with Daniel Morad on row two, with Mirko Bortolotti and Harry Gottsacker on row three. These are, of course, all of the prototypes at the front of the field. Look at these names here. All IMSA drivers, James Vance and Nick Boole on row four. Guy Cosmo and Parker Chase on five. James Pesek, not in the Mustang. He's in the Dallara P2 with Michael Johnson on row six. And finishing up the LMP2s, Matt McMurray and Lance Wilsey for the front end of the grid. No surprises to see Bruno Spengler and Robbie Foley on the front row. Those two old fours from last year, with Philippe Eng and another BMW and Julian Santero on row two. John Edwards and Riley Dickinson on row three, packing the front end of the field with BMWs. Tony Kanaan, yes, that Tony Kanaan, is alongside Augusto Farfus, Gregory Leofug for inside of row five, and part of Kliegerman. He's quietly confident. Mike Ogren, who was at Sebring in real life last year. Dylan Murray on row six. These are the GT Le Mans. Oh, there's a lot of BMWs in there. Alec Udell and John Texier, Ryan Hardwick and Randy Solari. I didn't see Nick's name in that, Nick Tandy's name in that, so he may not have gridded up just yet, but he was running in the Corvette, as we have the cars on the pace lap. And temperatures, well, we know that track temperature here is key, and you've been checking the race time and what is going on in terms of the track temperatures, because that could really dictate, particularly for the GTLMs, as we said in the IMSA Radio Keys to the Race, Nick, how you have to drive at the early part of the race.
Yeah, they're starting the race at 3 o'clock today with a pretty quite accurate temperature. It's going to be quite warm. So the track temperature will have got up and be just about its warmest of the day. And the warmer, of course, the track is, the more your tyres will wear, and also the less grip you'll have. So it's it's they chose the most difficult time of day, which is quite sneaky. As they get this full long, you get a full lap at 60 miles an hour, which when you're doing the warm-up lap, you just want to get going. It seems like an hour and a half, to be honest.
You will notice that we have a split start. This has been organised, suggested by iRacing and IMSA, and organised by the drivers. So I'm very impressed with how they have done this. These guys are pro. It's a horde of BMWs at the sharp end of the GT Le Mans field. The zebra split on the livery for that BMW at the front. That's the Robbie Fawley car. Meantime, we have the Porsche iRacing safety car coming down to turn 17. As we'll wait for them to come round. The cars have not crossed the line yet. So GTs are beginning to speed up on the back straight. You can't see that, but I'm watching the split times, and the GTs are going to be up to pretty quick speed by the time the prototypes go across the line, which they do now, and the hour is counting down. Scott Andrews leads them away. It's been a fantastic start in GTE, or GT Le Mans, by Robbie Fawley, who has jumped away. Meantime, the number 70 of Daniel Morad is up into third position in that bright pink number 70. It's Heistand in second. Andrews, though, appears to me to have got away to a decent start. So the GTs, having dropped way back, led by Bruno Spengler, Nick, then started and began to warm up effectively and get some dynamic heat into the tyres going through turn 17. They were hauling by the time they got to the start line. Off already is the number 48. So that is Shinya Mishimi, former champion in Full Metal Lamborghini Racing in the IMSA Championships. But what a start by Scott Andrews, Nick.
Yeah, I think both classes started really cleanly. Now, interesting, what happened with the GTLMs, they absolutely gave it down the back straight, which meant they ended up going into single file round turn 17, which is by far the safest way. So I think not only had they come to a gentleman's agreement to hold back, but they also come to a gentleman's agreement to be sensible about on the first corner. So surprise. So sense breaks out in motor race. That's a major headline for any publication, isn't it?
Certainly is. Now, is that still Bruno Spengler at the lead of the class? I don't think it is. So see how they go through. We'll see them. That will cycle at the line. But I'm pretty certain Robbie Fawley got the drum. Oh, leader has had to slow down. So has that been an off-track incident there, Nick?
Yeah,
and then that's a slowdown?
He's taken too much on the entrance to Le Mans, which is the corner which leads onto the back straight. You try and steal as much as you can as you flatten out. If you take too much, you get about a second and a half slowdown, which actually comes out to about 3 seconds, especially down that back straight. So that's a bit of a disaster there. Was that Spengler? That
was, no, it was Philip
was
Eng. It was
Philip Eng, yeah.
Yeah, it was Philip Eng, and he's back behind Tandy. Tandy is in that fourth position for the number four Corvette, running in the dark grey and yellow colours. Tandy's been putting a bit of time in this week. In fact, we interrupted him to talk to him in midweek motorsport. He said he was hopeful he could get down to the 57s, and he thought he might be competitive. Well, he did a 55.9 in terms of his qualifying run. So he's well inside that, and we'll get some times through at the end of the first lap. Notice that we do have the full half and half, full half and half, you see what I mean? The two half and half cars. So the BS, the Bureau Sud zebra colours on one side of the Turner BMW, that's the yellow and blue on the left-hand side, that's Robbie Fawley. And ahead of him is Bruno Spengler in the black and white with the leading car now as he goes off on the entry to turn 16, Le Mans. Let's head back to LMP2. First time we've seen these cars in IMSA Racing Pro Series presented by Simcraft. New addition to the iRacing stable as well. They look fantastic. Cross the line, Scott Andrews, 147.5. Chased through by Highstand and Morad and Gottsacker. Then Mirko Bortolotti stepping up into prototypes. There's Mashimi coming back through the field in the 48. The silver and blue, the red, white and blue car. All the way back down in 10th position at the moment. And he's got James Pesek. James throwing me out massively by driving a car that isn't in Pesek PF Pink. The number 9 car, which is in pink, is Michael Johnson.
Yeah, John, Machimi did that thing which is so annoying when you've got slightly cold tyres. You've got the braking wrong for the hairpin, which he just swept through behind them. And that meant he ended up going wide. And by the time he rejoined the track, obviously got off track, which don't matter, but he would have fallen near enough at the back of the field. It's an error which is irritating on lap 15 when you just lose 3 seconds. But on lap one where you lose about 7 places, it's kind of like almost like the worst thing that could ever happen to you.
Right, let's keep an eye on the timing and scoring as Shinji Mashimi fighting his way back through with a very calm, cool, collected and a paucity of movement behind his wheel, just flicking the steering with his second finger on each hand. A triple monitor setup. Now, why is that important, Nick Dearman?
Well, it gives you the point about it is it gives you that peripheral vision. You have, effectively, you have a left window, a right window, and a central screen. You can see that Shinji's got it set up so that the middle and the right screen are looking effectively straight ahead and slightly over the right-hand pontoon, but the left-hand side you can see very clearly indeed. It's all about that peripheral vision. The other option is to get one of these ultra wides. It all of them a big, big advantage in placing the car. It doesn't make it any quicker, but makes it easier to race. You can place the car and know what's around you, which is especially important in multi-class racing. You just have that better spatial awareness.
New fastest lap of the race in GT Le Mans from Robbie Fawley in the BMW number 96. He's just put in a 56.3. Behind him, Julian Santero and Nick Tandy are having a cracking scrap. And I think, yeah, that's Tandy. Has he just gone through? I think he might have. No. Yes. Just squeezed through. My apologies. That's Eng right in front of him.
I think Nick Tandy, the definition of ploughing a lonely furrow, there's not in the top nine, which are all BMW GT8, apart from Nick Tandy, who's really got amongst the BMW. And don't forget that in the full pro VCO race we did a couple of weeks ago, the BMW is absolutely the chosen car with the current balance of performance. So Nick is starting, not with one hand behind his back, but perhaps one finger behind his back. But, talent can make up for it. But, that's a beautiful move.
Down the inside at the hairpin. And that is Philippe Eng. Mm. Philippe Eng ahead of him in the yellow and black car. My apologies. That's Eng, rather, in the black and pink car behind him. Sandero ahead of him. I'll get this right in a moment. Haven't had enough of the sacred coffee. Eng tries around the outside at turn 10. That's a bold manoeuvre in the real world. And also, Tandy on his left-hand side. Had to give way there as they went through 11 and they're sweeping into 12. Looks like Eng just blocked to the inside there as they went through tower turn. Now on that really fast run to the sweepers on the far side of the circuit. First part is absolutely flat. Setting the car up, trying to keep it as stable as possible and to take as much as you can go off the track to driver's left here to try and open out turn 16 onto the Alec Ullman straight, the back straight, and that's exactly what all three of them do. Oh, that is the 9. That is Michael Johnson in that pink Dallara we were talking about earlier. And now, did he jump or was he pushed? He's dropped a huge amount of time because that's the start of the lap. He's just going through Christensen curve now. Two free quick repairs, Nick, we saw in the race summary earlier on. Yeah. Just for those joining us who don't know about iRacing simulation, explain what that means.
Well, if you have a crash in iRacing, you will pick up damage. That damage is randomised based on all sorts of algorithms, but mainly about how hard and what you hit. And that damage will result in the car being slow or handling oddly. Normally, when you go in the pitch, you'll be given a certain amount of time to fix that. If anything, believe it, from 0.2 of a second to 44 minutes, but the average is a couple to 3 minutes. That would obviously put you completely out of contention in a short race like this. But with a fast repair, as soon as you hit your pick box, you are repaired back to full health again. The only problem is, this early, you can't go down the pit lane and get the fuel stop you need. You need at least 22 minutes into the race. So it will be an extra run down the pits. You have to balance how much you're losing against how long before you can make a pit stop to see whether it's actually worth going in the pits for the free repair. Because it will still cost you that pit run time driven job.
Hello to Carol Brink from Monterey, California, who is tuned in. Sound and Vision Live at imsaradio.com. Imsaradio.com, at imsaradio on Twitter if you want to get in touch with us. Here's that battle continuing for third position, again at the far side of the circuit. And it is Julian Santero in the yellow and black BMW from the ready pink and black. That's Philippe Eng. Tandy sitting in behind. I think Tandy will be quite pleased with this earlier on. Remember that the GT Le Mans cars did not start with a full fuel tank. And that is the organisers, as Eng looks down the inside to turn 16. He came out of the slipstream really early. Gets a good run. Lets off the brakes through the inside of the corner. That is a quality manoeuvre, particularly with the bumps that is there. Just going... That is a new third place driver then in GT Le Mans. Nick, just going back to the fuel situation, with the GT Le Mans starting with only three quarters of a tank, this is a sneaky way by the organisers to make sure that we actually have a pit stop from the GT Le Mans cars, and it's not just a slip us on full fuel save run for those cars.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a possibility if you were really, really, really careful, you could get in there without a pit stop and thereby save about a minute and 10. So by starting without a full tank, it means you will definitely have to stop. When you stop, it's up to you. Now, the interesting thing here is that Philippe Eng obviously used the slipstream to get past, but Santero. But the fact is, it's not necessarily a bad thing for Santero, because if he can stay within the slipstream, he can actually start saving fuel, much in fact as Nick Tandy is doing. Nick Tandy is in the grey and yellow Corvette, is saving fuel. That's frustrating, maybe, but he can save fuel behind Santero, which will mean when he comes into his pit stop, if he saves enough, it'll be shorter, and so he might actually be able to hop him in the pits even if they came on the same lap, or he can decide to come in earlier if he thinks he's quicker and run the undercut. So there's a lot of flexibility, a lot of tactics in fuel, and the good drivers can save a remarkable amount of fuel just by sitting in the slipstream and not trying to overtake.
And in our IMSA Radio Simcraft keys to the race, we were talking, and the tyres, we always put that in there. And the GT Le Mans, if they are going to be grip limited, will it be the front tyres or the rear tyres that suffer towards the last 10, 15 minutes?
It's the front. You do put a lot of pressure on that front left with a lot of fast corners going around the left. And even the best drivers find it hard to stop the cars from sliding and skipping right when you're going around the Sunset Bend turn 17. It's just, you know, yes, they're way more precise than us normal human beings. Even so, you know, you're 3 inches off where you were before, and you're bouncing in a completely different direction because it is, you know, so undulating. But there's a lot of tactics going on there. This may look like an hour sprint, but there is a huge amount of tactics. Once you throw a pit stop in, all things are up in the air, and these three cars particularly are almost certainly now thinking much more about what they do in and around the stop, even though it's 20 minutes away, at least not 30 minutes.
And do you so you think they'll run to the end of that 75% of fuel they were given at the start, Nick, and then calculate what they need to get to the end? Yeah. And hopefully not put more than a couple of litres extra in?
Yes, I mean, that's absolutely right, John. I mean, the fact is that the fastest way of doing it, because obviously the less fuel you carry is the less weight, is the faster car. The fastest way to do it is to run as long as possible, in theory, and then to put exactly the minimum amount of fuel in. There is a slight issue with that, is that in the secondary, the second class, the slower class, you're not always certain how many laps you're going to have left to do, because you actually may have to do one lap either way. If you get passed by the leader at a certain point, you'll do one less lap than you would if you don't get passed by the LMP2 leader who'll be lapping you. So that's a difficulty. The other thing, obviously, is that whilst it is theoretically quicker to run it to the end of the tank, if you're being slightly held up by someone, coming in two laps earlier actually is better, because you can then go out and try and get them get past them, say, on the undercut, where you get going quicker. So it's there's a number of ways where when cars are this close, it enables you to actually make up a position in the pit. So it's, it really is the modelling of real life in endurance racing.
Let's head to Dylan Murray, who's... I was going to say who's carrying one of our Simcraft onboards. Of course, we can choose whoever to go on with. He's in the Porsche 991 RSR for 16th, in fact. He's just gone past Ryan Hardwick on the far side of the circuit. Traffic becoming an issue. He's at Simcraft. He's been working there, practicing all day, as we heard Sean telling us earlier on. Up into top gear, down the back straight now with traffic behind him. And that's Augusto Farfus, BMW number 15, through turn 17, misses the bump on the exit all the way out to the grass. Then he'll just gently diagonal across to the right hand side and use all the road on the right hand side. The pit wall actually gets rebated slightly on his right hand side. He wasn't able to use all of that, so that's compromised his entry into turn one. Can't go onto that grass there. It's very slippery indeed. Set yourself up for turns 3, 4, and 5, which you have to think about as a single entity. And again, Dylan pushed off his ideal line there because he had prototypes coming through. And that's cost him a position as Augusto Farfus goes through Big Ben, through Gurney, and down towards turn 7. Now, change of surface here, right on the braking area as they come down into turn 7 in front of the hotel on the left hand side. The little kink at 8 is absolutely flat up towards turn 9, and then the braking area for the right hander at turn 10. Dylan really losing out on this lap with the traffic, but gains now. Traffic giveth, traffic taketh away. That's endurance racing. He's got another prototype right in behind him, and he may have to go off the ideal line as he goes into tower turn. Exactly what happened. And that's cost him a position and a bit of real estate, as we've seen with Dylan Murray on that Simcraft onboard lap, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, he did the best he could, really. The cars met him at a certain point. He managed to let them through without, it seemed, losing too much time. I think he got a little bit further offline going through Christensen in turn 3, 4, and 5, which did allow him to get overtaken, of course, unfortunately, by it was like I said, Farfus, wasn't he? Through. So Farfus, I think, it was recovering from problems. I think he's looking at his lap times. He is a couple of seconds lap faster anyway in that BMW. I think Augusto's obviously had a bit of an off at some point and lost some time, is now recovering himself. So, yeah, I mean, in fairness, actually, if you looked at what Dylan Murray was doing, that was an example of knowing when to be passed. And looking at that, he didn't really lose a lot. It was a bit unfortunate he got overtaken coming to tower on 10, because that does take you offline, and it's very hard to make it back up again. But apart from that, I think he drove really well, to be honest.
The virtual bumps are translated into actual movement, of course, on the Simcraft rig, which is what Dylan is driving at the moment. So this is going to be a bit of a physical workout. He is one of the drivers who likes to wear driving gloves on the steering wheel, just to give him that authenticity of how it feels. Not everybody does. Racing seat as well. Doesn't have to wear his helmet, of course. So has got the headset on, though. And he will be talking to a crew chief here, Nick, and working out those tactics we were speaking about early on.
Yeah, there's a couple of auto crew chiefs, so computerized crew chiefs, who will work out your fuel requirement when you come into the pit, so you can tell them you don't want tyres. And you set yourself a kind of a limit. Do you want to have exactly the amount of fuel you need, or do you want a bit of a safety margin of 1 or 2 litres or 0.1 or 0.2 of a lap? Now, normally, they're pretty good. However, they can get it wrong if you're in a particularly the wrong place regarding this zapping and not being lapped by cars in multi-class. So the fastest car class, they will normally have no issue getting it right because they can work out you've gone this far in 40 minutes, you go this much further in 20 minutes. Problem is, if you're in the other class and perhaps you've just been lapped after 40 minutes, they'll think, oh, well, you're not going to go as far as you think you are, and they won't put enough fuel in. So you have to kind of bear that in mind as well. And if you have too much of a safety margin, you'll be fueling too long, which means you could lose positions in the pit. It's really difficult, especially when the cars are so close here.
Parker Kligerman running at the moment in 11th position in class, 23rd overall in another Chevy Corvette C8R, relatively new to the iRacing platform. Parker, I think, knows that we're watching him as well, leaning into the corners. That's how much he's immersed in this at the moment, and talking to someone at the moment, all the way down to first gear for the hairpin at turn 7. Let's head back to the front of the field in GT Le Mans, where Bruno Spengler has Robbie Fawley right in his wheel tracks, and interestingly not seeing anything in the rear view camera. There it is, just popped up there now. Robbie Fawley in the 96 Turner BMW, sitting in behind Bruno Spengler, who has dedicated an awful lot of his time, real world racer, same as Robbie. And last year, really dominated the IMSA Pro Series, which was all GT Le Mans last year. And that thanks to BMW, the manufacturer for whom he drives in Full Metal Racing, really jumping in to esports early. Getting in some tremendous driver mentors for the real world drivers, Lauren Heinrich among them, and Bruno benefiting from that massively last year, Nick.
I think it's safe to say that BMW have embraced, certainly were the first to embrace esports racing, and I would say probably along with Porsche have embraced it by far the strongest of all the manufacturers. I mean, the situation where their most recent GT3, the new M4 GT3 prototype, you know, you can race it on iRacing, and the thing hasn't actually been released yet, but it is being updated on iRacing as they run the development of the real racing car, which will actually won't hit the tracks in pure anger until the beginning of next year, which is an amazing tie-in.
Guy Cosmo, good to see him out on the circuit again, being a perennial runner in IMSA, sitting in ninth position in that number 12 Dallara at the moment. So that's Le Mans on the left. What's that one?
VIR?
That's VIR on the far right, and I think it's Watkins Glen. Is it Watkins Glen?
No, it's not the Glen.
No, it's not the Glen. It's got the hairpin like that.
Answering the postcard. He's got a similar set of me in that he's got a slightly wobbly seat. You notice you do see that it's not got a firm anchor on the steering wheel, so that's obviously something that gets there's an issue in the house where it's not set up the whole time, I think, probably. But it's nice. It is interesting that he's, you know, in shorts and a t-shirt, but he's got the full length gloves on, the full gauntlets.
What else would you wear, really?
Well,
and he's showing his sponsor off as well. So
that is true, actually. In fairness, actually, no. My nude hands just seem unsponsored, it's unfortunate.
You could have something tattooed on there instead.
It's a great idea. I should that'll be for tomorrow.
38 minutes still to go. So we're coming down to around just over 20 minutes gone. So in theory now, Nick, we're actually in the window for GT Le Mans to fuel now, and LMP2 to fuel now LMP2, and go to the end.
You're absolutely right, John. GT Le Mans absolutely been for the last 3 or 4 minutes. I would think for LMP2 be one more lap, though there would be slow. The only reason you come in now is if you had a bit of damage and you wanted to clear that as quickly as possible. There's no point coming in this early because, in fact, you're just running the car as heavy as possible for as long as possible. So at this point now, if you do pick up a bit of damage, that trip down the pits won't cost you the trip down the pits because you will need to stop anyway.
Yeah, correct. So if you've been hanging out with a bit of damage, seen some fastest laps coming in. Overall fastest lap, still our leader, Scott Andrews, has pulled out to 3.5 seconds on the 74 Dallara, 146.9. 48.7, Guy Cosmo, that last lap. We were watching him and listening to his engine. That was a 48.7. That was his fastest lap of the race. Bruno Spengler just put his fastest lap of the race in the lead of GT Le Mans, and he has to, because the fastest man of all in GT Le Mans is Robbie Fawley, who's just 8 tenths behind him. Oh my goodness me, that's Spengler. Spengler off from the lead of GT Le Mans. There goes Philippe Eng going through. Santero must be pretty close behind. Yes, he is. There's Nick Tandy pouncing as well in the dark grey car. So Spengler, the Canadian.
Either just lost it coming through seven, took it, being too aggressive again and gone off in the grass, or he got a nudge as someone else spins out from
A battle for fifth fifth and sixth. Oh my goodness, what a mess this is.
Another one now, 24's gone round.
So that was Harry Gottsacker. James Vance was involved in that as well. And then John Edwards has been involved. Now, straight to the pitch there.
That's a good idea. Vance, he hit something.
Mashimi again involved as well.
Love to see what happened to Spengler, though, because he pushed. Was he nudged out by Fairley? Was it a mistake of his own?
Well, have a look at the incident points. See if you can find out.
Who knows how far they've been off track, though?
Scott Andrews is in elegant isolation, finds himself 5.5 seconds to the good now, with Daniel Morad in second place. Highstand had a slow lap last time around in 150.7. He's dropped another second away from Morad, so I wonder if those two maybe had a little bit of argy and, if you will, bargy. But this is a demonstration by Scott Andrews. Scott, who is no stranger to this form of racing. In fact, won earlier on this year in the iRacing Pro Series IMSA Invitational. And he's also used to driving LMP2 based cars, as he was in the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring last year in November with JDC Miller Motorsports in the DPIs.
I did what you asked, and Bruno Spengler is only showing an off track. He's not showing any accident incident.
Right.
So it's like he just overcooked it. And once you get on the grass, as you know, the grass in iRacing is a little bit slippy. Getting it back on again is very, very difficult. So he was stood up for a while, swearing the entire way, and now giving himself a comeback drive where he's got to try and make about 10 seconds on Robbie Fowler, which is going to be very, very difficult, how closely matched they were.
Another fastest lap of the race by Andrews last time around, 146.691. It was James Vance, by the way, who dived into the pits after that incident with Harry Gottsacker. They were battling over fifth and sixth. Now, Tony Kanaan having a battle with Julian Santero for fifth and sixth. Spengler's got about 5 seconds up the road, and Kanaan, well, great to see TK back here side by side. Santero back down the inside in the yellow and black car at turn three. Looks to me as though Kanaan is a little bit quicker at the moment, but these guys are throwing these GT Le Mans around. John Edwards is not that far behind, despite the fact he was caught up in that schmozzle earlier on in the number 24 BMW, running the more traditional, shall we say, RLL Rahal Letterman Lanigan BMW colours, the black with their M Sport stripes. I've said this before, I'll say it again, you cannot make a car look worse with M Sport stripes on it. Doesn't matter what the base colour is.
Yeah, I tell you what, I had half an hour in one of these M8s this afternoon, and they're actually really, really nice car to drive. They're very, very placeable, so I can see why they're chucking them about, because they've got the big footprint, as we know from A Thousand Memes, but it does actually make them honestly, I was surprised how pleasant the car it was, and I was doing 157.5, which I'm seeing isn't that bad, actually, so I'm quite chuffed myself.
Yeah, what assists did you have on, Nick? Come on, tell me.
Nothing. I don't drive any assists anymore.
Okay, very good. Very good. Daniel Morad in second, Richard Highstand in third, Mirko Bortolotti in fourth. All put their fastest laps in last time around, but the lead is still 5.6 seconds. Meantime, this battle continues big swing out to try and go around the outside, and it's done. That was great by John Edwards. Smashing run from John in the BMW. So from fighting with Julian Sandero a lap ago, the lap before, Canaan has, in fact, he did actually get ahead of Sandero, didn't he? So he's dropped a couple of laps. Right, now, this was a little bit earlier on. Ah, it was a curb on the right-hand side through the S's. And then, oh, no, there was contact. There was contact. And that was the leader being...
Lapping contact, yeah.
Yeah, Richard Highstand. I wondered why he'd had a 150. Remember I said that? So Richard Highstand in third in the 39, the blue P2. He got absolutely taken... Or he did do the taking out on Spengler. And then in 17, big slide by, who was that? And that was, and that's where James Vance was involved, wasn't it? And headed straight to the pits.
Vance was neck code by the looks of it, whereas the Highstand, it's a bit odd actually, because I remember I was saying to you before we came on air, I remember Richard Highstand from having accidents. Was that in real life or in virtual? You said it was in virtual, but he's carried on the whole thing, because that was absolutely him. He really shouldn't have gone for that.
Yeah.
He's taken Richard, out the leader.
Richard is very, very fast. I think, you know, patience is the key there. Well, you've got all his stats, so you'll be able to look at his safety rating. That'll tell the story.
If I can find him, I will. His safety rating, he's a 2.3, nearly 4,000, so he's getting quite quick, actually. So 2.3 kind of means average.
Okay.
Basically, it means sometimes it goes well, other times, not so much.
As we've just seen, just like real life. Another new fastest lap by Scott Andrews stretches the lead to almost 7 seconds at the front of the field from Daniel Morad in the red number 70. Then Richard Highstand, another 1.8 seconds back in third. The new fastest lap in GT Le Mans has just gone to Bruno Spengler, recovering after that attack from Highstand. He's down in fourth and 1.6 seconds away from Tandy in third. He's 2.7 back from Philippe Eng in second. He's 6 seconds now behind Robbie Fawley, who inherited the lead. James Pesek in the pit lane for the prototypes, and Conor De Filippi in the 25 BMW in. So they will be able to go to the end from here. So Conor De Filippi really has just split this up into two 30-minute stints, Nick Dearman.
Yeah, I mean, he's taken 14.3 seconds of fuel. That's all he needs to get to the end, and that should be the same amount that everyone will need. Look, you'll go so far for us. We saw, we came back through the field. He's had a much longer stop.
Damage?
28.5, but there shouldn't be damage because you've got a fast repair, so it's a bit odd. But, there are strange anomalies. But yeah, so there's a couple who've been a bit longer. We've lost a couple of drivers. Nick Boulay and Ryan Harwick are no longer running. It now is kind of like, let me choose when I want to go into the pits. Theoretically, going long is quicker, but you know, there are tactics where they are, where they feel. And sometimes you think you've got a bit of damage. I'm sure I've got any. You're very disappointed if you haven't got any. You're just slow.
That's Nick Dearman. I'm John Hindhoff. We're exactly halfway through round one of the IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by Simcraft. The run to the flag comes next.
The Simcast. News, reviews, special guests and racing updates from the virtual motorsport community. Whether it's console or PC, controller or wheel, the Simcast has you covered. The cars aren't real, but the racing is. The Simcast, Thursdays at 8 p.m. on RS1.
RS1.
Or search for The Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.
We're at virtual Sebring International Raceway for the first round of the 2021 IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by Simcraft. IMSA Radio on play-by-play duties. Nick Dearman and John Hindhoff in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre at IMSA Radio if you want to get in touch. We are right in the window now for pit stops. with battles all around this. How hard are people trying? That's the question. I get the sense that there's slightly less battling going on in GT Le Mans than there is in LMP2 at the moment, Nick, where the GT Le Mans drivers are trying to save a bit of fuel. Of course, as I say that, John Edwards goes side by side with Julian Santero for fifth place, and in fact takes fifth place, then loses it, might get it back again as he is on the far side of the circuit, might be able to go down the inside, going past one of the Ferraris there. So that's the sole Ferrari, I think, that we have in the field. It's Randy Solari that's running that number three car at the back end of the GT class at the moment. It is going to be front tyres that will be the worry for GT Le Mans, Nick, rather than... And we've been talking to the guys. Nobody's talking about changing tyres and taking the extra time in the pits, of course, to change those tyres as John goes through at turn 17.
No, because it would take 14 seconds to change a pair of fronts and 28 seconds to do all four, and that's just not viable within...
You'll not make that back, race. Is that what you're saying?
You just won't make it back. And I think there is a situation where some of the drivers, this is going to actually, will actually separate the good sim drivers from the good drivers, because that's one of the things you find is that the tyre management gets built into the speed with the experience of some of the top sim drivers, whereas the other guys who are quick don't necessarily, they don't realise it's a bit unfair, but just by their natural driving style, which they haven't adapted to the sim element, will find themselves burning through the tyres. It's not going to be night and day, John. No one's going to end up with a Silverstone Lewis Hamilton style puncture on the last lap, but they will, if they overcook the front, begin to see drop off of perhaps 3/4 of a second a lap in the last 4 or 5 laps, which could be, given how close this is, absolutely key.
Maybe we'll see Sebastian Vettel in the near future, because it looks like from the news from Formula One today that his drive's under threat from the new reserve driver.
making his
mouth go. I'll leave you to catch up with that news if you haven't, although we'll be talking about that on Midweek Motorsport over on RS1 at 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 in the UK on Wednesday. Right, Scott Andrews leading the race, lapping GT Le Mans cars. He's got 7.3 seconds. Is he with his team now, Nick, working out where he's going to cycle back in? Is he trying to look for a gap in traffic?
I don't think so. I think that the reason being is because we are in a situation where also the GTLM cars are pitting. You can't really guarantee who's going to be where. Because it's not, and of course, it's even more difficult when you've got two different speeds, because you've got to think about, it's not just, okay, it's going to take you 50 seconds. I know where I'll cycle back in compared to the P2s. Because there's a range between 10 and 13 seconds lap slower, the GTLMs, they could be anywhere. So at this point, you probably just sit going, if he suddenly sees there's four GTLMs up ahead of him, then you think, do I want to go past those or should I come into the pits? That's the real balance. It's like what you can see in front of you, you might lose, rather than worrying about the vagaries of counting back.
And is that the same for Robbie Fawley, who has a very much up on the wheel, NASCAR-style driving position, likes elbows bent? I've got to say, I really like bent elbows. I'm not so sure about having the fully laid back and knees up on the top of the bath kind, feet up on the top of the bath kind of position, sort of sitting in a Formula car cockpit. Is Robbie having to make those same decisions at the front of GTLM, or is he just running his own race, Nick?
No, he could run his own race now, because he's got a nice cushion after Spengler's bad luck, and he just really has to look at his relative, which tells him where the other cars are, and work out where the P2 is going to come by him and make sure he minimises any time loss that might happen. But apart from that, he's not going to get to the point where he's going to hit the back end of GTLM, which would be an issue, because it's hard for GTLM to overtake GTLM and have that speed differential. So he should really run to his comfort level of tank, which is probably, you know, when he has a lap left, he'll come in rather than pushing on that very last lap. There's no need to take any risk in case it happens. But so probably really is putting in a fantastic performance, aided, it has to be said, by Richard Feinstein.
Yes. Shinji Mishimi came in from fourth position last time around. That means Mirko Bortolotti and the 888, the number 888 Dallara, has gone through into there. Shinji taking on enough fuel to get him to the end in just under 23 minutes' time. There will not be any intervention by the safety car. I should have said that earlier on, really. We had a couple of... we had races last year where we had a mandatory... random yellow and safety car period. That's not happening this year in the three IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by Simcraft Events. We're at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca for our next outing. And by the way, if you're watching this and thinking that you want to get involved, well, it's a good idea. We'll come back to that in a moment. Here's the three leaders in the pits. Scott Andrews come in. 22 minutes to go, so that's about half, just over half a stint of fuel that he needs. I tell you what, his lead cut down massively there by a couple of seconds last lap around, just 6.2 seconds as they came into the pits, with Morad in second, Heistand in third.
That's a fall shortly by the pit lane, because the start-finish in Sebring is actually during the pit lane rundown.
Got you.
So
it
squeezes
stop.
The gap down. So he didn't actually lose time at all. It's just a weird anomaly of where the start-finish is in Sebring. But yeah, they did 38 minutes plus the rolling lap. So that's quite good fuel consumption as well. So the guys have driven intelligently.
Andrews has not lost the lead. Scott Andrews has not lost the lead, even accounting for that pit stop. Bertolotti did not come round. He did not come around. Andrews is out, having done the pit stop that will take him to the end. Morad still in second, and that 8.2 seconds, just to absolutely underline Nick's point there, is maintained. And still Richard Heistand, another 1.5 seconds further back. Bertolotti now just 3.6 seconds behind Heistand. But of course, he has still got to make his pit stop to get him to the end of the race. Shinji Mishimi has done his pit stop.
No, everyone stopped, John.
Has Bertolotti stopped as well?
Yeah, he stopped the lap before Mishimi.
I apologise. Yeah, okay, I apologise. That explains why Andrew's got in and out. So that is the correct lineup on the left-hand side of the screen in LMP2. Still waiting for the leaders in GT Le Mans to come in. Foley, Eng, Tandy, Spengler, your top four at the moment, and Spengler right with Tandy for third and fourth position, down to the hairpin in front of the hotel.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a case now where Spengler might even think about coming in early, because unless he believes he can breeze past Tandy on the Ormond Strait and into Sunset this time round, he might think, well, I am now effectively held up by Nick, so yeah, I might just take a bit of an early fuel stop. Now he could try the triple over and under, which we saw Philip Eng do with a three corner pass, come up the inside of Cunningham, then kind of drive around the outside through Collier, but you have to get there in the first place. And I think Nick's a little bit wiser to that potential move now than he was perhaps 20 minutes ago.
Nick Tandy, for so much of his career linked with Porsche factory driver, making the jump across to GM and Corvette. Massive American racing fan. Started his career here in Europe, unusually, on short ovals, and has a real hankering to do some stock car racing in the States. So being with the bow tie, very exciting for him. I think that was a spin there for Scott Andrews, or at least an off-track incident.
Yeah,
with John Edwards.
There was a confusion. Yeah, with John Edwards in the BMW. We saw the end of
turn
it.
Six.
It certainly was a 1X.
Tandy
stayed ahead of Spengler around after the slipstream and Sunset. So hopefully we'll see what happened to the 74. He's lost about 2 seconds of his lead. So I think it was more of a kerfuffle, fumble over, took a bit of grass, picked up an instant point, which won't matter in this race, as there isn't enough time for it to recount. But it'll he's lost a couple of seconds. He's probably had a big old swear at the BMW saying, what are you doing? But he's managed to get past with a worry, but he hasn't hit anything, so the car should maintain its pace.
What has that done to Scott Andrews and his lead? It's taken about a second and a half, 2 seconds. Yes, exactly so. So if you're Spengler now, you're going to come into the
pits.
Yeah.
I pick because you're on the... He's not the... John Edwards, DeRay Dickinson, Tony Kanaan, look, the cars are pit. It might actually be there, but they're at the end now, and they all have to pit. But I think Spengler should have... If he has two laps left, he should have pitted, as we have an issue again for Farfus. Look, after Farfus spins the BMW.
It was Farfus, not John Edwards. John, I apologise. So it was Farfus that spun right in front of the leader.
Right.
And slowed him down. I don't think there was no contact there, but it certainly slowed Scott Andrews down. apologies, John. Farfus running a bit further down. We've had pit stops from John Edwards, Tony Kanaan, Riley Dickinson and Conor De Filippi as off into the wall, Parker Chase in the number 19. This is the almost tangerine and grey coloured Brian Hurt at Autosport with Kerb Agajanian LMP2.
So he lost that coming out of Collier. I think he got a tank slapper coming out of Cunningham and lost it through Collier.
Leader in GT Le Mans in the pit lane. So this, I mean,
they're all in.
Normally you would say it would trigger, and it probably will, but there can't be any intervention by the safety car. But it looks like Eng, Tandy and Spengler have all come in, Nick.
Yeah, they're taking I think that was probably the end of the fuel stop. And again, obviously, Spengler managed to save some fuel and come out in front of Tandy by being clever. That's great. But otherwise, he should have come in a lap earlier and made the most of it, I think, because he was, you know, they were running nose to tail. And away go the first two.
Eng's rolling faster than anybody else. Foley from Eng. Where's Tandy?
Back in third again.
Right, so it's as you were. So Foley out first in GT Le Mans, followed by Eng. Then Tandy. Somebody spun in the pits, pit lane, in that little exchange down in the pit lane. So who else was in the pit lane at that time? Didn't see. Was it Farfus in for a second stop?
Well, the interesting thing is that Robbie Foley has taken less fuel than anybody else, 11.4 seconds. Whereas the other end of the extreme, Bruno Spengler took 12.9 seconds of fuel. So I'm not sure whether Robbie may have made a miscalculation. Though his overall pit time was longer. So who knows? But it's an interesting pit stop. The shortest person actually in the lane of all was Nick Candy, 1.3 seconds over Bruno Spengler. So Spengler actually lost more time in the pit. So he's going to have to get a couple of laps getting back on Tandy's tail before he looks for another way past him.
Part of Klegerman, by the way, that spun in the pit lane in the yellow Corvette. 15 minutes to go. The run to the checkered flag for the first round of the IMSA Pro Series. So... Oh, no. It wasn't Klegerman. It was Julian Santero who came in completely broadside. Late decision. Oh, and then he blocks the Suez Canal with a BMW. I've seen that meme.
Brilliant.
I'm
sorry, Drew. That has to make the iRacing monthly highlights. That was brilliant. I haven't done as terrible a pit entry as that, and I've done some terrible pit entries.
If he could have only flicked it into reverse and done a reverse flick into his pit lane, that would have been perfect.
And then he lost in powers. It was brilliant.
Somebody in the wall and then quick back to the pitch. That was the number 19 car, Parker Chase, again with an issue. So he's towed back to the pits effectively there. That was coming out of 17. I once did that coming into the pit lane at Lime Rock Park in an MX5 race. Lost it completely. Spun it round 180 degrees and then managed to flick turn it and get it into the pits pointing in the right direction without hitting anything. Which was a total fluke. There's damage to the left front of the number 70 of Richard Heister, Daniel Morad, excuse me. And I think that might just be slowing him down a little bit. Looks like the left front corner is damaged. Now, if we can see it, that probably means there's more damage and it may be slowing him down. Parker just went wide on turn 17, got onto the grass there, and at that point realised that the car was probably too damaged to get all the way around the track. Into the last 13 minutes, Scott Andrews by 6.5 seconds to Daniel Morad, 74 from 70. Then the number 39, Richard Heistand, another 1.5 seconds further back. He's got 4.5 on Bortolotti in the 888 in fourth. Shinji Mishimi charging back, but 16.8 seconds away from fourth. That's half a minute away from the leader in fifth position. In GT Le Mans, it's Robbie Foley for Turner Motorsport and the 96 BMW coming around turn 17 right now under the crossover bridge. Philip Eng in the red number 89 BMW. Then it's Nick Tandy in the green yellow Corvette, the number 4 car. Bruno Spengler in the BMW Bancolor cars. That's the two-tone grey and black Zebra machine, the number 7 in fourth position. And they are separated by about 10 seconds. 15 seconds further back, John Edwards in the number 24. That's the black and M Sport coloured car. Tony Kanaan in the red number 11 BMW. Another 4 seconds back. That's your top six. So only Nick Tandy breaking the Bavarian domination. Now, if you're enjoying what you're watching and you'd like to start racing with iRacing in the world of esports, get onto iRacing.com today, and there is 40% at the moment off new memberships. 40% discount from new memberships. Go to iRacing.com, and if anybody asks you, tell them IMSA Radio and the iRacing Pro Series sent you. Okay?
Yeah, and
you don't
I
have to say that to qualify for the 40%. I've got to tell you that.
And I couldn't recommend it higher. One thing I will say is that if you're worried you've got an old PC, the iRacing is not particularly graphics card intensive, because no one can buy a new graphics card at the moment. So you can actually have a very good experience with some of the older PCs out there. So I recommend it thoroughly. I've wasted most of lockdown getting almost adequate. Not that adequate. I haven't pitched off the 91 recently.
It's Dylan Murray being unceremoniously thrown off by that was Parker Chase, wasn't it?
He's having a time, isn't he?
Was it Parker Chase? Yes, it was, I think. So Dylan, sorry, Mason Felipe, that replay, excuse me. Mason in the other Corvette, of course, the number 198. Meantime, Nick Tandy holding on to third position in the better placed of the two Corvettes, or better placed of the Corvettes. He's still behind Eng by about 4 seconds, and Foley by about 6 seconds rather, and Foley up the road by 3.5 over Eng. Still leads Richard Highstand in that blue number 39 Dallara, sits in third place ahead of him by about a second. Daniel Morad in the sort of highlight, a red, orange, pink, call it whatever you will. It's the number 70 car, and they are 8.5, call it 9 seconds now, behind the leader. Richard Highstand with other prototype traffic around him. The car ahead is the second place car that he's trying to chase down. Highstand with just on 14 seconds ahead of Mirko Bortolotti in the 888 Dallara, through the S's at the far side of the circuit, off the track for a moment, and then turning in to the right hander, trying to open out, of course, the corner down the long back straight, the long undulating back straight, the Alec Ullman straight, and down into turn 17 under that bridge. The bumps seem to get worse every year, particularly on the exit. This is, of course, a moment frozen in time. Drew might be able to tell me this through my headset of when this representation of Sebring is. So what we about the only thing that iRacing can't do, we can model the weather, we can have dynamic adjustments on the cars, including the new performance changes to LMP2s that the WEC are implementing to make sure that the P2s don't challenge the new hypercars in real world racing. But what we can't do is exactly model how things change every winter at Sebring. 8.5 minutes to go. Let's get back to Nick Tandy, who is being closed in on by Bruno Spengler, the BMW Bank Team RLL car. The dark coloured machine with the zebra stripes right in the wheel tracks of the man from Bedfordshire. Down towards the hairpin, all the way down through the gearbox. It looks like Spengler's got a little more in the tank at the moment. I don't mean that literally, but certainly the lap times would suggest that he's just easing in to Nick Tandy, and he's brought that down to under a second. It was half a second last time around, Nick, and therefore he's within striking distance, and we've got a little battle pack here.
Yeah, I mean, he's half a second a lap quicker, and I think he's been consistently half a second a lap quicker the entire race. Just unfortunately, he got punted off for 12 seconds at one point. So he's going to get to the back of up to the back of Nick in a lap and a half's time, and give himself what? It's probably two laps to have a go. But I think it's, you know, the Murrayism, you know, catches one thing, passing another is key. Because he didn't seem to have particularly the velocity to do with the typical overtake of very evenly matched GTLM, which is to pull out down the Almond Straight and dive in round the sunset. So unless he's just being circumspect, my guess is he's going to have to try something particularly clever to get past, unless he can perhaps get a double slipstream as they go past the only Ferrari in the field of Randy Solari. Into this very, very tricky corner.
Tell you what, Nick, what's going to be crucial here is where Scott Andrews is on the track, because when Scott Andrews crosses the line next time around, computer says three more laps, and that could be crucial for Spengler. Third place, Richard Highstand, down towards the hairpin corner at turn seven. Spengler's just put in the fastest lap of the GT Le Mans race, a 56.2. Barely a second quicker than what you were turning this afternoon, Nick, which Spengler will be absolutely gutted that he wasn't quicker.
I think the track's a bit hotter, to be honest. I don't believe I'm that quick, so I think the track's a bit hotter, to be honest.
There was me building you up.
No, I'm fully aware of my, but I'm very chuffed that, as I said to you before, I hadn't driven that car at this track since this time last year, and I was 7 seconds faster when I just started, so I was chuffed with that. But you know, I know my place.
Nick Tandy still battling the dark-coloured BMW now with lights on, which, as everybody knows, in any form of racing, gives you at least another 40 horsepower. And then you get another 10 horsepower when you flash the lights. Spengler pulls out at turn 10, trying to have a look down the right-hand side, the inside, but has to play follow my leader for the next couple of corners. Will he have a go at the tower turn at turn 13? No, he's not close enough. Tandy driving, I'm sure, with one eye on the mirror, making that Corvette very wide indeed, holding on to the final podium position. But Spengler is right there as they come through the sweepers at the far side of the corner. The Jean de Bian Benz, named after Olivier Jean de Bian, the French driver who in 1962 won Le Mans with Phil Hill, the last time a front-engine car won Le Mans, by the way, Ferrari. Down the back stretch now, it's Tandy on the flasher, and he is on the flasher to another Corvette there. I think that's part of Kligerman ahead of him.
He might be flashing it, but he was benefiting from the tow.
From the slipstream.
Bruno couldn't pull out the extra speed he needed to get past and dive up onto into the Sunset Bend. So actually, flash. But actually, thanks for the favour. Thank you for your big hole in the air, sir. So Spengler now, what, two laps, possibly three. Obviously, any micro mistake by Tandy and Spengler's through, but if he just runs the line, realistically, the only chance to overtake is either that three-corner pass we saw going at the top of the circuit around Cunningham, which needs to be built up by an exceptionally good exit from hairpin coming up.
So this is all about planning and scheming here and knowing where your car has the advantage. Bruno, a picture of concentration, very little movement behind the wheel, very smooth as he turns in to the slowest corner on the circuit at the hairpin. Now through eight and the kink at nine, heading up towards turn 10. I don't think he's close enough to have a look down the right-hand side here. Picks his braking spot just between three and two. Nick's got to keep off the curbs here. Who's got the grip on the front end with the Michelin tyres? Do note, by the way, it is a full decal pack now for the IMSA races, including the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship number boards, the Michelin branding on the tyres. Oh, and we've got a prototype getting involved there. Through the sweepers, onto the back straight for another lap to be complete. Oh, lovely run by Bruno here. He's got a crack. And, he took a little bit too much curb on the right-hand side, but it might still be good enough for him to get into the draft going down the long back straight. He's there or thereabouts. When does he drive to the right-hand side? He goes in very deeply on the brakes. Tandy trying to hold him off, but I don't think he's got the front tyres. But Tandy's toughing it out on the outside. That's tremendous driving by the Corvette. Fabulous stuff from Tandy. He's a hard man to pass. brought up on the short oval, so he knows all about taking momentum through long corners. And my goodness, he showed it there, Nick Dearman.
That was great driving both of them, because it's not like going round a lovely flat piece of asphalt at Silverstone. You are bouncing all over the shop. And Tandy actually just wipes the nose off the prototype there, and that's given him a bit of advantage because he's managed to get a prototype between the two of them. He'll gain that gap.
Vance
will blast past now with no loss to Tandy. And he was lucky there, because sometimes you come across there into turn three, the prototype behind you, you find yourself being punted off. But Vance, clever enough on the brakes. Spengler now has to try and catch up again, but he's got such a lot of speed in hand, Bruno, in clear air, but getting past more distance. That was a great attempt to get past through the Sunset Bend 17, but it's so hard because you're just bouncing everywhere, and they got as close as they could, and they didn't hit each other, which is the key point.
Scott Andrews has just gone across the line. And when he went across the line, there was about a minute and 53 seconds to go. So I think we'll get one more after this one for the leader. Now the question is, does he catch these two battling GT Le Mans cars in the next 7.5 miles? That's the question in my mind. I think these guys will have one. No, are they going to have two, I reckon?
At the end of this lap,
yeah, absolutely. Back on the back straight again and again. Oh, it's a little exhale in the driver's seat from Spengler, as if to say, I'm not sure I'm close enough this time, and he's nowhere near close enough. Closes up under braking, but doesn't get the inside line this time. Follows Tandy's line. Tandy goes really wide on the exit. Nicky Katzberg, Tandy's teammate in Corvette Racing, did a great interview for Mobile One The Grid this week. Check your local listings, where he was talking about Sebring, and he said from all the years he's been to Sebring, he doesn't think he's ever got turn 17 right. It's his nemesis corner. He just has no clue.
Straight up the inside.
Up the inside into turn three.
Well, that's wow. A great move. That was a really good move.
Optimistic, but did it.
Helped Tandy, obviously saw the element of inevitable about it, but that was, very aggressive and, pretty much do or die, but he was allowed to do it, let's say that.
Tandy certainly looking for... That was... I thought we were going to get the checker there, but we are now on the final lap. White flag is out. Solari is in the pits literally by 1 second. We go on to the final lap of the race. We will complete 34 laps in this first round of the new season, the new two class season for IMSA iRacing Pro Series, presented by Simcraft.
Yes, Scott Andrews has put in a pretty untroubled run.
I don't think he's put a wheel wrong, has he?
Well, yeah, all he
has goodness! Foley is out of fuel on the last lap. That was one of our IMSA Radio keys to the race. So through has gone Eng. Eng has gone through to lead. There's one more lap. So this is Eng coming to the white flag for GT Le Mans. And we said, and you said, Nick, that Foley had took less fuel.
He took a second less than Nick Tandy, 1.5 seconds less than Spengler, a lot less than John Edwards. So I mean, it's likely that Tandy with a different engine may need less fuel, but all the other BMWs took at least another second and a half, which is a few more leagues. I'm surprised he's run out this lap, though. That's well short, isn't it?
I think they were expecting this to be the last lap, if I'm honest. He still would have been tight, but another 3.75 miles. Robbie Foley is going to drop way out of it, having led. He's still trying to go around. He's dropped down to fifth. Meanwhile, onto the front straight, onto the famous piece of concrete that has seen so much action down the years. And history is made for Scott Andrews, who wins the first multi-class IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by Simcraft. Takes top points for himself and the team. And the 74 Riley Motorsports RHG Esports Dallara has won. Meantime, in GT Le Mans, Philipp Eng, the Austrian for BMW, and the number 89 team, that red car for BMW Team IMSA, Team RLL, looks as if... and Robbie Fawley is not going to finish. I don't think he's even going to finish. Gregory Leofug, I think, is slowed down as well. So there may be more drivers who are struggling with their fuel. So Philip Eng now with not even a quarter of the back straight as the gap between himself and Bruno Spengler. It's under 4 seconds, but he's got big slide as he turned into turn 17, Sunset, for the final time. But it will be the Austrian who comes to the line and takes GT Le Mans. It's a 1-2 for BMW. And Nick Tandy, that...
I think Tandy's on fumes, you know.
I think Tandy's on fumes. I tell you what, though, Nick Tandy, that rear guard action, that's cost Spengler the race. You could say that Spengler, high stand, having the run down the inside of him, the Le Mans curves, or Jean de Bian curves, and then Tandy holding him up for a couple of laps. He could have won this twice over.
I'm amazed how wrong Foley got that. He got that wrong by 6 litres. It wasn't just a flick wrong. It was 6 litres wrong. It's something's gone horribly wrong with his calculations.
What are they use a lap, Nick?
They use about, I think it's about 6-7 litres a lap.
I think they expected one lap fewer. Because Scott Andrews went across the line to start the last lap. It was literally a second. Otherwise, the checkered flag would have been out. Scott Andrews, it is that wins for Riley and the RHG Esports team. Number 74 by nearly 11 seconds in the end. A relatively quiet race for Daniel Morad, who comes home in second position. I think he'll be pretty happy with that run for Allegra Motorsports and Moradness Esports. Richard Highstand, good job we don't have a virtual Bo Barfield. I think the car barn with Peregrine Racing, Gazex Racing Team, may have had some penalty. Merkel Bortolotti, a relatively sensible run to 8th. Shinji Mishimi had an exciting race in 5th. Harry Gottsacker in 6th. James Vance, he had a few incidents as well in 7th. Michael Johnson in 8th. James Pesek in 9th. And Guy Cosmo makes up the 10 in LMP2. Off the lead lap, Lance Wilson in 11th. Matt McMurray, Parker Chase, Nick Bull all had problems. Parker and Nick particularly very early on in the piece. As far as GT Le Mans is concerned, Philip Eng wins it in the end by something under 5 seconds. From Bruno Spengler in 2nd. Corvette Chevrolet on the podium with Tandy, the man who up until recently had won the last 3 real world runnings of Sebring 12 hours. He'll be delighted with that. John Edwards comes home a battling 4th again for BMW ahead of his teammate Conor DeFilippi. Riley Dickinson in the number 53 Team Hardpoint EBM Porsche coming home in 6th position ahead of Tony Kanaan, Parker Kligerman. Robbie Fawley finishes 9th out of fuel on the penultimate lap, partway round the penultimate lap, and Gregory Leofug comes through in 10th position. Problems for Santero coming into the pits. Mike Ogren, Augusto Farfus had an uncharacteristically difficult race ahead of Michael Lewis, Mason Felipe, Alec Udell, Dylan Murray, Randy Solari in the Ferrari. Both John Tessier and Ryan Hardwick both out early on. Those were the finishers and how they stood at the end of the race. With a bit of luck, we will get some driver interviews, and we will start with our overall winner, Scott Andrews. You've made history. You have made history as the first ever winner of an IMSA iRacing Pro Series race presented by Simcraft that has had more than one class. You made that look rather easy, Scott. I suggest it was a little more difficult than it looked from the outside.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool, first of all. And, it's never easy. I guess everything just fell into place. And, I worked a little bit on the setup before I got here with actually one of my old engineers from JDC who worked on the DPI last year, actually, when I debuted in that at Sebring. So we come up with something pretty good, and it was reasonably easy to drive, and it turned out to be quick enough.
In our Simcraft IMSA Radio Keys to the Race, Scott, we were talking about respect the virtual bumps. And there will be people out there who have watched this who had a bit of a giggle at that, because we know what Sebring's like in real life. You have first-hand right. experiences, as do I, although not in a race car. But that setup you're talking about, does that have to take account of the virtual bumps and respect those virtual bumps around Sebring?
Yeah, 100%. Actually, that was one of the biggest things, as we were just working on the compliance over the bumps. We found a fair bit that we could work on with the shocks to get it to get over the bumps pretty good and not lose too much platform. So, I think in the future, maybe we go fix that up, because then some guys, maybe like myself, might have too much of an advantage, because we're actually in, professional sim teams. A shout out to RHG, Roman Grosjean simulated team. I'm lucky enough to drive for his esports team. And thanks to our sponsors, Predator Gaming also. And it was actually cool to have the 74 on the side as well, since I drive that. And it was nice to get although it wasn't the 12.
Oh, I think we're just losing Scott there for a moment. Winner of the IMSA iRacing Invitational race back in January, and now the overall and LMP2 winner of the IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by Simcraft. Scott, thank you very much indeed for joining us. And let's head on to our winner in GT Le Mans in the BMW. Hello to Philip Eng. Congratulations, Philip. Can you hear us?
Yes, loud and clear. Can you hear me?
Need to get your camera back on if we can for a moment, Philip. That would be brilliant.
I'm on the case.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. We'll just let you get that on for a moment.
Here I am.
Well, that, Philip, was a little bit more fraught than perhaps we had expected. And clearly you benefited from Robbie running out of fuel there with more than a lap to go.
Yeah, I'm really sorry for Robbie. He drove a fantastic race. And I just kept it cool in the beginning. I tried to save some fuel, save my tires. But we had a great team in the background. Elias, my ghost engineer, was spot on with the strategy, such as the whole team. So very happy to be winning the opening race. And thanks to IMSA and to you guys for hosting this cool event.
Always good to do this. I thoroughly enjoy it, and it never ceases to amaze me how many parallels there are with the real world. Tire life was perhaps not as big an issue as we thought it might be this week, but front tires did seem to be going off there in the last part of the stint. Was that something you had to be careful with early on?
Yeah, exactly. I just tried to save fuel in the beginning of the race, tried to keep it cool. I got the slowdown in the very first lap, which was a bit of a setback. But from then on, I just tried to keep it cool. Bruno and Robbie had amazing pace as well, such as Nick. Was a great fight with him around the outside. He's such a hard but very, very fair racer. I really like racing with him on track and on the virtual world. I just tried to keep it cool, and here I am. Really, really cool effort.
When you overtook Nick, I'm not sure I've seen that happen in real life, and I'm not sure what the team managers would have said about that. That was pretty cool driving from the pair of you. Toughed it out for what, two or three corners there. That looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, especially in IMSA, also in the real life, I must say the racing is so good, and I really enjoy my racing in the United States. And it's just a mirror to the virtual world. I mean, everybody is racing, not everybody is pushing a lot, but on the other hand, everybody is very fair, and that's what racing should all be about.
You're in for the full season, Philip. Are you going to be back with us for the next one, Philip?
Yes, definitely. I'm so keen on being back. I put in a lot of practice before this event, and I'm sure the practice will only become more and more. It's all about practice in sim racing and just getting those little tricks here and there, how much you can use the track without getting an off track. So yeah, I will definitely be back.
The BMW Steamroller continues. Philip Eng, winner in GT Le Mans. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Let's check in with Daniel Morad. What a run for Daniel. Second in LMP2 for Daniel. Hey, man. Fantastic run. I don't know what to say. I didn't see you make a mistake, but, you know, at the end, what, 10 seconds back from Scott Andrews. He had the setup today, didn't he?
He did. I mean, Scott himself is a setup. He told me he was on baseline. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to uninstall everything if he's on baseline. But no, it's cool. You know, the coolest thing about this series is you get to hang out at home with your buddies all online and race virtually. And if it goes wrong, then it's okay. The car can just be reset, right? We had two quick repairs. I actually didn't go off the track once today, which might be a first because I'm known for mowing the lawn. I have a landscaping service virtually, of course. But no, it was great. Really cool race. Started P3. I didn't have the best quality set, I would say. I didn't really put a lot of emphasis on it. We all saw how Daytona went and you know how important it is for the rear tires. So yeah, I mean, just managed the car, was patient and brought it home at the end. And right now we have the disco going. You can't see it, but I'm live streaming right now in my
That's
chat.
That's a Twitch, isn't it?
Disco.
Yeah, very good. I want to see Daniel Morad, Moorman, on the side of the car for the next time it comes out, or landscaping services. Obviously, you're racing with the Allegra Motorsports name there, but also Moradness Esports. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's something relatively new, Daniel.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm still trying to find the way. I mean, you guys can see it. Esports is growing at an exponential rate, and thankfully I'm involved in it from a very early point. And, you know, being involved with Mercedes-AMG Motorsport, is something very special for me. It's my first taste at doing something with a manufacturer officially, albeit in the virtual world, but it just goes to show you what these manufacturers are putting in on the digital side and how much it's growing. The coolest thing is how you can connect with people. And Moradness Esport, I want to create some sort of community. You know, Moradness, the brand itself, I'm not sure if you're very familiar with it, but it's a clothing company I started back in 2017 after we won the Rolex 24. It just kind of randomly started. And my better half, Jessica, she kind of took the initiative to get Moradness going and create like a clothing brand that was motorsport motivated that you could wear at the track and away from the track. And it was very community-based. And the Moradness Esports side is going to be a community-based aspect, you know, where we really want to bring everyone in, include people, build a nice community, share our knowledge, and just have fun, ultimately. And on the other end, I have a partnership with an already established team called Satellite Racing. So we're going to formally roll it out in the next few weeks, and it'll be called Moradness Satellite E-Stars. And that's going to be a pro level effort with Split One iRacing and other forms of racing as well.
Love it, mate. Congrats on second place. I know you would have rather been one further up, but that was a good effort today. See you
at
the next
one. I'll keep working on it, though. Great hearing you guys. See you.
Cheers, Daniel. Have a good one. And finally, I think we can have a word with Nick Tandy, who was the best non-BMW, I think it's fair to say. Nick, talking to you on Wednesday, you said you'd been happy with 56s and 57s. You were well inside that in terms of your lap time. And you end up on the virtual podium at the end after a cracking battle with a couple of BMW drivers. Do you enjoy that?
It was all worth it in the end, John. yeah, it was like they were ganging up a bit on me, really, weren't they? When I saw myself in the middle of a bunch of eight BMWs at the start or something like that, then I thought, here we go. And I think there was some team tactics going on the start, which, you know, fair enough, that's racing. But yeah, it was good in the end. I didn't quite have the pace. You know, clearly Bruno was the quickest out there, and he got really unlucky. Yeah. Philip had probably a little bit of pace on me, but we were there thereabouts, and I'm happy to have a good run and get a Corvette on the podium again.
Some cracking battles between you. First of all, you and Philip side by side for two or three corners out at, what, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, it seemed to me at one stage. And then the run into Sunset with Bruno side by side where you held him off one of the lap. I did say in commentary, you used to go around the outside with your short oval routes. Do you enjoy all of that as well? I mean, so close, the racing, and so respectful.
It gets a bit stressful, I must admit. I've got a real bad pain in my wrists currently from just gripping onto the steering wheel, because kind of sim racing is so alien. When you go and drive a real car, it's just kind of natural. It's just what we do. But driving the sim and especially being in a competition, you know, we're all used to sim driving and, you know, working on car development, this sort of thing. Actually racing and having something on the line at the end of it, it's all a bit different. So it gets a bit stressful at times. And I don't particularly like it when I lose, but I'm really happy to get on the podium. It was a good race. I enjoyed it, yeah.
Where do we get some of your teammates from Corvette Racing? No Tommy Milner for this race. Is he going to jump in before the end of this three-race series?
I hope so. I know he couldn't make tonight's race, but I'm hoping there's going to be, you know, a representative from Corvette, because I actually can't make the next round. I'm otherwise engaged with a bit of testing. So, yeah, hopefully we'll be represented on the grid by at least one of us, because, yeah, you know, it's great that the CAR is on the iRacing platform. I've obviously done quite a fair bit of work with it since the back end of last year, and yeah, it's good again that IMSA put this show on and give us all something to do in the off time.
Thanks for your time, Nick, both on Wednesday and again tonight. Best of Brittany and the family, and speak to you soon, mate. Well done.
Yep, cheers, mate.
Nick Tandy joining us from Bedford, where it's a little after 1 o'clock in the morning. Nick Damon, opening of a new chapter then for the IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by Simcraft. And we're back on April the 22nd, 6:30 p.m. ET at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. A very different challenge for the P2s and for the GT Le Mans.
Yeah, it all did kick off at Laguna last year, didn't it? I think overall, the multi-class element has worked really, really well, because it's added both a second race, but more importantly, it's added that tactic of overtaking, being overtaken, working out when the race is actually going to end for your class is another point that's come through. And of course, we did manage to get a P2 taking out the leaders, so that always is going to just you know, reinforce the anti P2 feeling within the iRacing community.
Just like the real world, it's always the prototype driver's fault. Nick Damon joined me, John Hinoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Our thanks to everybody who has made this possible, including all the techs at iRacing up in Boston. Drew Adamson and the rest of the team, as ever, have been brilliant. Absolutely golden. Tim Gray was making sure everything went well on the IMSA radio side up in London. Join us then for the next one. For more details, you can always go to imsa.com or to imsaradio.com. And we'll be back at WeatherTech Racing, at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. In the meantime, don't forget iRacing.com, 40% off new memberships. That's a deal. See you at the next one. Bye-bye.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.